Okay. We are now at the last stage of tonight's class, and I want you to take out one more Tree of Life diagram. This will be our fifth Tree of Life diagram, and it is going to be called the Path of the Lightning Sword. You can, if you wish, label each of the Tree of Life diagrams with their pertinent titles. There's the tree itself, you know, the ten sephirot could be the first one. The second one is the pillars. The third is the triad, etc. Whatever the diagrams are about, you can put their names up at the top of them so as to remember them easily.
What was the title of the tree?
Just call it the Tree of Life. The Tree of Life diagram.
The path of the something.
Oh, this one, this particular one is called the Path of the Lightning Sword. That's what this one is
going
to be. Right. There is the sense, when we do things like this, there's the sense of a system. And all systems are hierarchical. They have a beginning, a middle, an end, and various parts along the way that are clearly measurable and definable. Whatever we speak of first comes first, whatever we speak of last comes last, and everything else comes in the middle in a certain order. The very nature of order is that it be consecutive. And so we've taken a look at the tree and we've given them numbers. We've given the sephirot numbers. Scheherazade asked about the three contractions that produce the world, or produce the readiness to become the world before the tree even comes into existence. Why three? Why one, two, and three? Why are there 10 of these things and not 9 or 11? There are a lot of things that go into the numbering of stuff. And once you have a set of numbers, you have the feeling that number 1 comes first, number 2 comes second, all the way to number 10. And when you do that, you're assuming the passage of time. The very act of ordering something produces time, produces progression and succession. And so there is the idea that the world is created that way. If Kabbalah is in fact, or if the Tree of Life is in fact a version, a picture, of the process by which the world is created, and we do it in this very neat, systematic, orderly, hierarchical way, there is the sense that the world is created in bits and pieces. First this, then that, then the other thing, then back and forth, and up and down, and we have pillars and triads, and everything is arranged in systems. What I'm going to do now is, I am going to show you a method by which to understand this, that defies all of that and makes you think again. You could say, where the tree exists, there is no time or space. Time and space don't come into existence until the world of reality shows its space, and that's in Malkut. But before that, all the things that we've been describing do not actually exist in the way that we normally think of them. They're in a non-physical universe. They're all the things that come before anything physical ever shows up. So if that's true, where do we get succession from? How can you have things going comfortably and in a kind of nice, staid, respectable marching order, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, etc.? How do we get past that? Because there can be no ordering. There can be no system if time and space don't exist. So I'm going to show you a picture of how all this comes into being, how all this is put in place, in such a way that all of it exists as we spoke of, and yet none of this problem of ordering and succession arises. So the first thing that I'm going to ask you to do is to number the sephirot as we did before. Start with 1 and end with 10. Put every number inside a circle in its proper place. Go ahead and do that now. Is there anyone not done yet? Good, you're getting faster. You see, you're beginning to know this stuff already. Okay, now what I want you to do is I'm going to ask you to join these sephirot and their numbers again according to a slightly different pattern. The first thing I want you to do is I want you to draw a vertical line from the top of the circle of Keter upwards, about 3/4 of an inch. just as though the circle of Keter were a little comical caricature of a head with a single hair sticking up from it. Then, I want you to draw a diagonal line from Keter, or from number 1 to number 2, from Keter to Chochmah, from the middle to the right-hand side. Now I want you to draw a horizontal line from Chochmah to Bina, from 2 to 3. Now I want you to draw a long diagonal line from Bina to Chesed, from 3 to 4. Now draw a horizontal line from 4 on the right-hand side to 5 on the left-hand side of the tree. Then a diagonal line from 5 on the left to 6 in the middle and below. Another diagonal line from number 6 to number 7, from Tiferet to Netzach. Now a line horizontally from Netzach on the right to Hud on the left, from 7 to 8. Then a line from Hud, number 8, to Yesod, number 9, a short diagonal line from left to center. And finally, a short vertical from 9, Yesod, to 10, Malkut. This is called the path of the lightning sword. There are reasons why it's called that, which are biblical, and I'm not going to go into that at the moment. But as you can see, it is a jagged lightning stroke of a path going back and forth across the tree, from right to left to center to right to left to center, etc., all the way down. And just as in a stroke of lightning, the entire thing is done. The whole energy of creation is accomplished at a single stroke, just exactly the way lightning flashes. And all the energy of a lightning bolt goes from top to bottom far faster than anyone can see, almost as close to instantaneous as you can get. That's the way the Tree of Life is created, and all of its parts, and all of its implications, and all of its meanings, and all of its layers and levels, all of its subtleties and complexities, and everything that you can say about it. The tree, its meanings, the universe, the whole world, tarot, and ourselves are created at a single stroke. That's the path of the lightning sword. Divinity doesn't work quite the way we do. Works very quickly. So, this is the path of the lightning sword, and this path, this is called the path of emergence. E-M-E-R-G-E-N-C-E, just like emergency, except they've got an E on the end instead of a Y. This is the path of emergence. This is the way the whole of the universe emerges from the initial will to be. And at the very end of the path of emergence lies the world that we call real. And it's the world that I called sleep and dream. It's the dream of reality at the very, very far end of the whole process. And in this sleep and in this dream, everything appears absolutely real and completely solid. Totally incontrovertible, totally without question. It's the only thing that you cannot deny. The solid, real universe. At the end of the process of creating the world, and at the end of the sleep, there comes a moment that's called awakening. This is the moment when spirituality is born. This is the moment when the dream of solid reality begins to be deconstructed when the sleeping form, the sleeping consciousness, which has been completely involved in the dream of reality, becomes aware that there is an invisible something hidden here. Up until now, the whole purpose of creation has been to hide, to submerge the process in the end product. The end product is the dream of reality, and in this dream, none of the previous parts are visible. You can't find it. You can cut open any solid object and look for a soul and you won't find it. You won't find divinity anywhere. You won't find force and form anywhere except as words. You won't find the tree. You won't find Ein, Ein Sof, and Ein Sof Or. Those things cannot be found in the solid objects. They are so completely hidden that you can't actually make a return beginning with that material. It is possible to be lost permanently and forever in the product.
In the product?
In the product, in the final end product of the real world. The whole of the Tree of Life is a process which produces the product at the end of a real universe and real people. The solid universe. This is what we have in front of us. And you can live here in this, believing in its reality and working with its forces and forms forever. It's possible to stay asleep in this and not have the slightest inkling of what made it and how it came to be. In fact, you can actually live in the complete denial that anything brought it into being. It's just there. There it is. Nothing brought it into being. There's nothing to be said about it. It's just there. And you can spend a lot of time tearing it apart, analyzing it, and putting it to use. And that is routinely done. For some of the sleeping beings who live here, who sleep and dream here, there comes a moment when they believe, when they think, when in their dreams they become aware that it's possible to awaken. What would happen if they awoke from this dream? What would they see? What would they find? And the impulse to awaken begins what is called the path of return. And the beings at the bottom of the tree find themselves in the interesting and difficult position of having to climb up the tree. And unlike the tree when it was formed at a single lightning stroke, the climb up the tree is extremely laborious. Very slow, very painstaking, and may take many lifetimes. And the manner of the doing is the whole process of the spirituality of Hermeticism. It's the whole spiritual process of magic. It's also the whole spiritual process of a number of religions. The process of awakening, the process of acquiring the knowledge of the invisible, that which is invisible in the world and that which is invisible in oneself, and arriving finally at a point of realization, illumination, and liberation. That's what happens when the process is complete. So the bottom of the lightning sword, the bottom of that path, is the place of the end of the process, and it's also the place of the beginning of the next one. So actually, the tree, in a way, can be regarded as circular.
So is that then why the 10th Sephiroth is there? Because it could be reduced to one?
That's right. The number 10 reduces very rapidly and very easily to one if you know how. If you don't know how, you go on to 11. And you just start all over again. It's possible to sink into the progression. It's possible to sink into the order of existence and never get past the ordering of things. The systematic development of a continuously more solid and more real universe. You can do that. Or you can undertake the process of deconstruction and of return. They're quite different movements, they're quite different impulses, and they lead to a great deal of misunderstanding and actually even in some cases of hatred between the proponents of one approach and another. In tarot, what you're looking at is the beginning of the possibility of the path of return. You can use tarot to explore, understand, predict, and counsel concerning the events of the world and what happens in the dream. People come to you with all of their questions and issues and problems in this world, and they want them resolved, and they want answers and predictions, and you can do that with tarot.
You can or cannot?
You can. Absolutely, you can. It is perfectly possible to understand all of the qualities, quantities, and connections between them of all the things that happen in both the invisible and the visible worlds using tarot, because tarot was created on precisely the lines that we're discussing now, and you'll see how that's done later.
It makes so much sense.
Yes, it does.
It really does. I mean, it's like I understand. It's like to explain it to somebody, I couldn't explain it.
Well, yeah, it takes a while to be able to explain it. I have to agree with you there. But once you begin to see this, it's as though a big light suddenly comes on in a dark room. And tarot can be used that way, and it's used very effectively that way.
Oh, it's so many different. It is layered, and we're talking about the depth of the well. It's like it's so many different things.
Yes,
that's
it is
going on with it. It's wild.
Yes, it is. It's actually quite wild. It's wild, actually, beyond your imagination. If you were, remember, we spoke at the very beginning of the first class about the fact that there were three pathways into tarot. One was theoretical, which is what we're doing now, looking at and understanding the system. One was magical, which was putting the stuff to practical use in the world, and the other one was meditative, which was changing states of consciousness. In the change of the states of consciousness, the things that we're talking about here that are theoretical become your actual experience. And it is a change of consciousness that will so radically alter the universe that you actually find yourself living in, that it really can't be described here, other than to mention that that's what happens. And it is the function and the reason for Kabbalah, eventually, to produce that kind of change in its practitioner. That same possibility for change of consciousness, change of states of existence, exists within tarot, because tarot allows you that kind of internal experience. So in addition to using this beautifully ordered and very rich system to explain the world of the dream to the people who are dreaming it, it can also be used to awaken from the dream and to pursue what lies behind it. So those are two quite distinct possibilities. And remember that so far, we've only begun to talk about the minor arcana. And we haven't even mentioned the majors. So when you look at the minor arcana, just be aware that the 10 sephirot are the 10 numbers of the minor arcana. And those numbers are filled with all the implications of Kabbalah. As I said, once upon a time that may not have been so, but it certainly has been so for a great deal of time. There are plenty and plenty of tarot readers who read without knowledge of this material, and they can. It's perfectly possible to be a fine reader without knowing this stuff. But the power that you get from knowing it is really intense. So it's worth the while. It's worthwhile doing. When you know that the numbers are filled with the implications of Kabbalah, and you realize that the aces bear the full weight of all the implications of Keter, and the tens are filled with the meanings of Malkut, and the fives are the way they are because they're the symbols of Gevurah. When you know those things, and you look at these numbers, all of a sudden, my God, you're holding huge cosmic forces in your hands, not just little pieces of paper with pictures on them. So this is where the numerology of tarot comes from. This is what it's made of. As I said, it's not the numerology that you find elsewhere. There are different ways of understanding number, and they're all quite profound. This just happens to be one of them. And it's the particular system that's applicable to tarot, and it's the system that gives us the pictures that are on the cards. And it gives us the root meanings that go with those pictures. I don't know if it's ever occurred to you to wonder why people say and why people draw the pictures of the pip cards the way they do. Once upon a time, when there were only the non-pictured cards, and you had, you know, things like the Marseille deck, and if you used the Marseille to tell fortunes or to read, you had only your teacher's word for what things meant. You had to learn them by rote. And after you learned them by rote, you could perhaps appreciate how true they were by your personal experiences of reading. After a lifetime of being a reader, you could perhaps validate that these things you originally learned by rote seemed to be true. But where did it come from? You couldn't tell by looking at the cards. And then eventually, the cards acquired the pictures, which were pictures of these meanings, and they began to acquire the pictures of the meanings of Kabbalah. And then over, 100 years, the decks began to evolve and change, but even so, at the root of the standard meanings that we find in all the books are these connections with the Kabbalistic system. So now you have an idea of where all this comes from and what power it has. And we're only halfway through this particular little course, and this little course is only the first touch. It's not even the tip of the iceberg, it's the tip of the tip. The interesting thing is that the 10 numbers appear 4 times each. There's not 4 of them, there's 40. What do you do about that? So it's not just an ace, it's 4 aces, it's 4 versions of an ace, it's 4 modifications of whatever Keter might mean. Question is, how is that possible? How does that happen? What does it mean to have 4 of everything? And that is going to be the subject of our third class next week. We're going to get into the question of the 4s of everything, the 4 worlds.
Looking at the cards, I'm just realizing that all the colors of the Tree of Life are in the cards.
Absolutely. All the colors of the Tree of Life are in the cards, and the colors mean something. Just like all the images do. If you took a black and white set of outlines without the colors, you would get a certain level, a certain set of meanings. As somebody mentioned, that the pillars are there, and there's some other structural elements that are very much, very specifically connected with this tradition. Then you add the colors, and you'll see, of course, that the colors refer to the colors we're talking about.
Exactly.
So the colors are symbolic, the images are symbolic, the meanings come from a symbol system that, as you can see, is quite vast. How does it make you feel to realize that when you hold a deck of cards in your hand, you're holding a picture of the way in which the entire universe was created and who and what you personally are?
It's quite overwhelming at first. I mean, I'm thinking about doing readings and some of the stuff that comes up, and I'm going, well, how do you relate people? It's like, you have this information, right?
Uh-huh.
I don't know if I can explain this.
Yes.
But it's like, I understand this on a whole nother level, but you have to put it in practical terms to people, because they basically want to know, you know.
Well, that's true.
You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely. You know, the interesting thing about Kabbalah is that it produces at its final stage, the whole reason for the existence of the whole system is that there should be something real when you're done. The point of Keter is to arrive at Malkut. If you didn't have the finish, if the thing were not concluded in the form of a reality, there wouldn't be an awful lot of point to the process. It would just evaporate as nothingness. It would become mist and blow away. So the end process of everything needs to be practical. So this too needs to be practical, and the question of how to make this information useful to people who come to you with their everyday problems and their everyday lives, and how to make it practical for yourself in the same way, that's actually an issue of integration. Over a period of years, as you learn to work with this stuff, and you think about it, meditate on it, contemplate it, and also take some risks and try it out in readings, little bit at a time, you acquire a certain grace in the handling of it. It isn't going to happen all at once, but it will happen. And this, remember, is only the very beginning of a very impressive process, so you're not likely to be able to do too much with it right away. But it's certainly something to think about. And even now, when you go back and do your next set of readings and you bear this stuff in mind, it may have its first practical effect. You never know. Before we're done with this, in a couple of weeks, by the time a couple of more weeks have gone by and we've done 2 more classes, you'll have had a chance to think about this some more, and a great number of additional layers will be added to what we've just done. And a lot more practical material will be given to you that you can pile one on top of another and actually find specific uses for. So, not to worry, it'll come. Chances are you took this course before, and I mentioned at the beginning of this class that you might find something new and useful in it. Has that happened?
Oh, that has. There's been a lot of new material. I think you've spent a lot more time on the pillars and just little pieces of information that wasn't in the first one, but there was other information in the first one. So I would highly recommend people to take as many classes that you can.
Oh, that's very nice of you. Okay.
Yeah, I can. This is Gina. I can see that wall. Now I'm going, oh, my God, now it's next.
There's a lot that's next.
What are we going to go after this?
You know, it's really funny. Over this last weekend, we did an advanced Kabbalah course that was based on this material and took it another whole step further. And quite a lot of very interesting things happened there. And perhaps one day we'll do that as a telecourse as well. Gail, I remember when we first spoke, this was this whole world of consideration was it had a certain edge to it for you. How do you feel about it at this point?
Well, it's really interesting. I mean, it's very enlightening. It's a lot of material.
Does it feel comprehensible? Does it make sense in such a way that even if you don't remember all its parts, it generally speaking makes sense as we go?
Yeah, 100%.
Is there an exercise to do for homework?
Well, actually, the only thing that I would like you to do for homework is to look over the drawings that we did. The actual Tree of Life drawings that we've done contain all the information and all their connections in visual form. If you look them over and get used to how they appear as pillars and triads and the lightning form, and you get used to the numbers and names and combinations of things, the concepts will become fairly comfortable and clear for you fairly quickly. When we get together next week, again, I will do a brief review. So if you can, spend some time, look the stuff over. You don't have to really memorize. Just get a sense of where everything is and how everything fits. If you want to memorize, just memorize the Hebrew names for the Sephirot. That will do for a beginning. And if you want to, you can add to that whatever pieces of vocabulary you can. Get a sense, if you can, of the implications of pillars and triads, what they accomplish, what they're about. Think about it. Contemplate it. Let it run through your mind at night. Wherever you can, whenever you feel in the mood. You don't have to push it. Just work with it gently. Let it roll around on your tongue, so to speak, until you get the full flavor of it. And when we come back next week, after a week of having a chance to integrate it, you will find yourself much, much more comfortable and much more familiar with it. And that's all that I would really ask you to do in the way of homework. So we are just about at the end of this class, and I thank you all extremely much for coming, and I look forward to seeing you next week.